Thank you so much for being here. This is a Tuesday night. I don't know, but I'm so impressed. And I thank you for always inviting me. You know, I feel like I live in Pittsburgh. I've read everywhere here. So many good people here. I will read one of my newer poems first. They killed a black man in Brooklyn today, a dirge for our sons. Papa Leo, Papa Leo, Papa Leo, Papa Leo, Papa Leo, ooh, ooh, Papa Leo, happy you were my ooh, ooh. They killed a black man in Brooklyn today. A policeman has just killed a black man in Brooklyn. Today, another black man shot and killed in America, where we must stop our car so a scorer can cross a busy highway. But another policeman in America has just killed another one of our sons in Brooklyn. When my phone alerts me, I feel my belly button turning hot, my legs buckled, and I could feel my own fingers trembling around the curves of my phone. Suddenly, I forget my son's number. I forget the way to call my own son in Brooklyn. My mind tells me it cannot recall how to push the buttons so my Brooklyn black son can assure me that he is not yet dead. To be a black woman is to be a woman ready to mourn. To be a black mother is to go to bed with your head halfway on your pillow. To be a black mother in America is to stand between night and day, waiting to see if the policeman will not kill your son today. They say a black man was shot in a city so populated by good black men, they now must empty bullets into another black man. They say a policeman in Brooklyn has decided to shoot a black man because there was a suspect on the run, or because he was holding up something, or because he was taking something out of his own pocket, or because he was just a black man. There should be no black man in Brooklyn if there is a suspect on the run. There should be no black man in America when there is a suspect on the run. When my phone finally remembers its own number, my son's voice on the line sounds like I have won the lottery. But somewhere, a mother has just lost her son in Brooklyn. A mother who gave birth to her son is wailing because there was a suspect on the run. Today, I saved the life of a scary doe that ran across my neighborhood road as if it knew the sound of tires, the sound of a passing car, the sound of death, the sound of a gun mixed before it kills a black man, before it kills a black man in Brooklyn. But they say we must not count. And they say we do not count. One black man was killed today in Brooklyn, but on TV, there is no news. There is no news of the black man killed in Brooklyn. On TV, white people are talking about white people. But somewhere all over America, a black man will be shot the way a black man was shot in Brooklyn. On TV, white people are talking about white problems. Why a black man swallows a bullet? Why a bullet swallows the life of a black man in America? Papa Leo! Papa Leo! Papa Leo! Ooh. In a Igbo tradition, that is the Igbo. It's a classic cry of the Igbo people, hundreds of years old. When they say, when they come to you and they say, your father is dead, you say, Popo Leo! It means, come, let us cry. Come, let us cry. Come and help me cry, please. Now, I want to read something else. Sometimes I make you cry, and sometimes I make you laugh. I wrote this poem called I Want Everything. I wrote it sitting in Detroit Airport. We used to live in Michigan for 12 years. So every time Delta flies me into Detroit to take me everywhere, they have to take you to Detroit. Like, you have to remember Michigan, that's your first home, okay? So I sat in the airport this day, and I just listened to a woman. I usually eavesdrop to write some of the poems. I want everything. How do you negotiate something you cannot see? But the woman on the phone is laying out in minute details the outcome of so many years of a marriage. Gate 11, Detroit Airport. Such an odd number, where a woman takes out all the ammunition of voice with calm and precision, as if this were only a board for flattening out dough. I'm terrible. I can't see. Can I move this? I need more light, okay? Okay. All of the passengers seated at the gate are invited to listen. This is a matter for divorce. All the property partitioned in small portions right here and made the airport's new carpeting so hard it feels like stepping on steel, and the feet of already weary passengers becoming brittle and sore, and the years that knew nothing about her impending divorce are poised for accounting. Listen to me, she declares, as if you could see her now at her kitchen tape sink, her dress splattered with cheese and oil and the years. A woman already old enough to be 60 or 70 or just 59. $500, $500,000 in hard cash, she says. This woman is calm, her voice so still it has become a windy thing. As if she'd already killed this man in her heart years ago. She may have soiled many pillows many nights, I imagine. She may have crashed many wine glasses after the consolation of wine bottles, the comfort only temporary but potent enough to wipe away years indiscriminately. Maybe she laid it all out years ago, waiting for the boy to grow up, for little Jessica to find herself. Maybe she'd swallow hard during many hard nights. Maybe she'd waited and grew tired of waiting. $500,000 up front, the lakefront property, $5,000 of alimony each month, and the 401k, She smiles, gazing out the window, eyes cold, tearful. Who is she married to? I shake my head. Outside the gate, our plane waits for nothing. In a few minutes, it will navigate the clouds, parting blue sky from white puffy balls, slashing up clouds so the plane can exhale, so its passengers can stay breathing. But how do we negotiate what we cannot touch or feel? I want it all, she says, into the kind ears of her smartphone. Listen to me, the stranger woman divorcing her husband from Detroit declares. Detroit, what a place on which to lay out the issues long distance. I want everything. Everything. This poem is entitled, I Need Two Bodies. I think you all need two bodies all the time. I need two bodies. You write poems and you never think of anything, you know, like, that's just a poem. I was shocked when I got a request from Canada. A woman was burying her mom, and she wanted this poem. Her mom, she wanted this poem read at her mom's funeral. So I had to give them permission for the poem to be in a funeral program. And they actually sent the program to me after the funeral from Canada. And I saw the poem. I'm like, it's not a real poem. So now I'm taking it seriously. I need two bodies. I need two bodies. One to sleep and the other to shuffle, push, and grind up a day. One to bend a rod and set the world upright. The other to cuddle the earth so it holds on to its hold. One to inhale and the other to exhale. One to lie down upon freshly dewed grass, the orange sun setting, dying down slowly in my other body's eye. I want my other body to drive like a stubborn engine, as stubborn as a woman after middle age. My other body standing on metal legs, ready to grind a large, dry hill uphill, to empty these muscles of aching pains down some drain. I want my working body to sigh and stand firm to all the battles a woman must wage against the grind of unsuspecting roadblocks. One body to be the everlasting pole against push. My one body on brittled legs as concrete as the Statue of Liberty on a cloudy morning. Or gazing eyes up upon my old tired face as I sit on a far ferry into the city, quiet as sleep. Then my sleeping, eating, resting body, rising out of unnecessary things, tells this old one, be still and know that I am you, be still and know that I am woman. I have a poem here that I've known Cheryl for some time now. I remember maybe 2 years ago, I invited her to our campus, and she just blew us away. And she touched my students, and I remember students calling their moms after she read those poems about her son. And one of the young men, I think he spoke with her a long time, and he got closer to his mom. But many of us have lost, before she lost her son, many of us have lost students, and I'm sure she's done that too. When you're a professor, you lose your students also to drug overdose. This book is the first book I wrote for Autumn House, and I was a professor at IUP before I went to Penn State Altoona, and I had a student called Dan. He came from Shanksville or something, and I didn't know what his problem was. He had a learning problem, I thought. So I spent a lot of time tutoring him, and he grew from F on to C by midterm, and close to the exam, he was making A's. Me and another professor tutoring him, and then he went home for Thanksgiving, and that was 2004. He went home for Thanksgiving that Wednesday. He was doing his presentation on Monday, his presentation for the end of the semester with his group, and they were the first group. And because he was like a son to me. I didn't know he was always talking to his mom about this African professor, you know, that was so kind to him. And so that day he came to class with a three-piece suit on. He was all dressed up. And I thought he looked so good, I needed to capture him. So I postponed his presentation to the last and sent people, students over to the library to get a camcorder. And I videotaped him. And he went home for Thanksgiving and did not come to class the following Monday. And Tuesday I was home, the university vice president called me and she said, please have a seat. Are you sitting? I said, yes. She said, I have bad news. And she says, his mom wanted me to tell you gently that Dan died in his sleep on Sunday night of drug overdose. I was so ill, I spent 2 days with diarrhea and crying, and I turned my office door into a memorial, and students were dumping flowers there and sitting at my office crying. And then we had a memorial service, and she came, and she wanted the video. She said, Dan called her right after the class and said, she recorded me, only my group, only my group. And so I had a videotape for her son. And I did not know that was his last time in class. And so I wrote this poem. I wrote this poem the next year, another kid died. I started a poem for him. I didn't finish it. And then another kid died. And then I was so mad, I wrote this poem. After the memorial. Today, another student died at school. Another boy at 20. Another sophomore. Another woman's only son. A girl in my class told me the news just before my 10 o'clock class. She said it was his heart, a bad heart, something that was always a part of him. She said something in his heart was always loose, a thin line somewhere where the heart was supposed to tighten, to pump blood from the heart to the brain, to the hands, to the feet, and belly buttons, to the toes, and back again to the heart. Something must have snapped, she said. Stephanie, a girl almost looking 19 or 20 or 21 or something, bloody eyes, red hair, she stood at my desk in tears. There she stood. Was I the priest or counselor or something? The delicate lines already making their way under her eyelids. This was her friend, her boyfriend, her best friend. He was tall and blonde and smart and funny and walked like he'd bought the campus and the whole world with just his looks. Someone told me afterwards it was heroin overdose and alcohol overdose and everything overdose. No one called the police. In a college dorm where the party can run over the rim of every glass and the fumes from everything everywhere in the party room can penetrate every fabric of everything alive, and everyone is red-eyed because something else is smelling. And you know, it is often too late to call the police or the ambulance, and of course, not his parents. He was supposed to come to, they said, on the floor where everybody left him so he could come to. Last year, another student died, my student, at home in a bed that belonged to him, where the sheets and the mattress were soft and white and cool and personal. The sheets understood the matter more plainly. They belonged to him. It was drug overdose, someone said. When the news came on the phone, I was at home, Tuesday, not a day for news. The dean from campus called to break the news to me. Why me? I thought. I was scared. His mom had asked to break the news gently to this one teacher. She would take it hard, and my son loved her like family, she said. I rushed to the bathroom, my stomach boiling when I heard. All the hours I'd spent tutoring this one kid until his writing skills, which had nothing to do with his writing skills, sharpened. His words had taken on color and detail and precision just so he would die. He had died quietly in his sleep, I was told. At the college dinner after the memorial, his mom held my hand tight, staring. He was our only child, you know, silence. I understand completely, I said. I understand incompletely. I will read two from a new book, and then I'll read one from here, and then I'll read one from the other, and that will be done. I have a poem here that says, it's entitled, I Want to Be the Woman. You know, I'm from Africa, and in Africa, we had a lot of polygamy. My father was from a polygamous family. And then polygamy died down, and then we have what you have here, promiscuity. And so we have all these Africans all over, you know, always looking for another woman. You know, it's like looking for another woman. They have a wife that is, you know, giving them hell, and then they're looking for more women. So I decided to write this poem. I want to be the woman, not the other woman. My husband is here. I want to be the woman. I don't want to be the other woman. Don't want to stay up nights for the phone call. Take your excuses and pour them down some rusted drain as from a wine bottle and kill yourself at dawn. I want to stay the woman who stands there waiting so her husband's lies rest like dust on the windshield of an old car. I want to carry deep scars of brokenness all my life, like our mother's mother's mothers who did not learn how to kill that old African polygamy, but kill it anyway. I am the woman. The maker of the bed, the unused love keeper, the breeder of fine children, scarred only by broken dreams in the broken places where our foremothers found company with other women and buried their babies' navel strings with hopes that someday something will happen. Now, no, I am already the woman. Kade, where head wife, the homekeeper. Kade, the owner of the afterbirth and the afterbirth pains. Kade, where the holder of hot pots, the keeper of the homestead, the fireplace holder. The powerless, powerful African woman after old paths of lonely women betrothed to too early to old ugly men. No, I am not looking for love. This body is too old for lovers to hang out in my dreams or in my daydreaming. Don't lie to me. I am too beautiful for you. Don't fool yourself. I do not need love. I do not think my Ai knew love, and I used to hear her say that love could not make a farm. My Ai, whose bare feet grew thorns from walking back and forth from farm to farm homestead, from farm to town, from tilling the land like a husbandless wife. My Ai, who entertained all the small wives of an already blind husband. My Ba, who was not too blind to sleep with multiple wives, but Ai had only one husband despite the crowd of wives populating her marriage. Yes, I want to be the villain only to my husband. I want to ground my last years under a cold blanket to guard my woman part from your invasion. I want to greet my ancestors, our mothers, with this old piece of my brokenness. Yes, I am Kade Wet, the mother of mothers. Kadewe means the head mother. Okay, I will close with this little one. I will close this with this. I hope it's in this book. If it's not here, I will. Hey, Celeste, could you bring me that other Autumn House book? It has the last 1 minute that I thought was in this book. The green one. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, the green one. That other one is not mine. Somebody give it to me. Yeah, okay. Okay, we've had so much and tears tonight. I read that poem, that memorial poem, mainly because of Cheryl. I've never read it, except when I'm reading to students. I read it for my students and to listen, you know. And I couldn't stop tearing up when Cheryl was reading her poem. Because her son was the same age as my daughter, our eldest. And this poem is called The Blessing. This is for you. Especially when you hear all that is going on in the world today. The blessing. Let your days ahead be sprinkled with laughter. In Africa, we bless people, so that's after that. You know, they bless you, and you meet an old person. If you have to go to work, don't greet them because they're going to spend the whole 15 minutes blessing you. They bless him. Let your days ahead be sprinkled with laughter, and with laughter, peace. May all you touch spring forth with freshness. Find time to giggle and dance and jump and watch the setting of the sun. When you wake up, wonder out loud about the sun's rays, about the darkening of the morning, about the fog over the hills, about your babies down the hall, about the neighbor and her dog. Wonder at the stars. Wonder and wonder why you are so blessed and why is it you are among those of the earth who have more than your allotted air for breathing? Wonder why the cat meows and why the dog wags its tail. Wonder and wonder why dew falls at night and about the squirrel's fleeting stare. Make laughter come alive in your home. And when you touch someone, let that touch be real. I mean real, my friend. Walk gently on soft ground. And when you walk on hard rock, step hard. This life is precious. May your year follow only through a clear path. And please, when you walk, let it be with God, my love. Let it be with God.